Stay awake. We've got more open lines for you when we come right back on Coast to Coast Day Out. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. And another, I got an email in from Betty out of Oklahoma. She said, talking about things that used to be, how about clotheslines? We don't have those anymore. She's so true. Go to the phones. Brendan's with us in Austin, Texas. Hey, Brendan.
Yes.
Welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going? Thank you, George. Thank you, Tom. Thanks, everybody on Coast to Coast. I was calling because I wanted to talk about EVPs. I was in an apartment that had both human and non-human poltergeist activity. I was there for 9 months renting. Okay. It was one of the worst experiences of my whole life. That was 2 years ago. It still affected me today, but I wanted to talk about the EVPs that I did there. And I got... you know, negative stuff. A whole lot, the majority was very negative just because of the area and the stuff that had happened there. But I got an angel EVP one time that I wanted to mention to you guys that I thought was cool. It was very unique. And it was a woman singing, and she said, freeing them. And I thought it was funny because we've always heard of the saying angels singing, but I got an EVP of an angel singing. And because there was so much negative stuff going on there, I mean, they were saying the worst of the worst stuff you can even imagine.
Right.
On the EVPs. And then you get an angel saying freeing them. That's really awesome. And anybody that wants to prove to themselves that the paranormal is there or some sort of afterlife or something is out there, to try EVPs, I would not do it in your home, though. I learned that lesson. You might not want to know what's in your home.
And in your case, too, Brendan, what happened at the apartment? Did somebody die there, or what do you think happened?
Yeah, there was a lot of suicides and domestic violence.
Oh, God.
And it just continued on and on. And if you look at the reviews of the apartment, everybody's saying the same story.
They sure are. You know, it might be time to start doing another EVP program. We used to do some of those, but, you know, it's tough on the radio because they're hard to hear anyway. And then when you play them on the radio, it's even harder. But some of them are pretty fascinating, too. Well, I'm glad you're okay and came out of it okay. Joan in St. Louis, welcome to the show. Hi, Joanie.
Hi. How are you tonight?
I'm good. I hope you are, too.
Oh, well. I had to call in about this telephone deal.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, my brother wasn't married yet, and he said he was going to have a telephone. So he had one put in. Guess how much we paid a month for the telephone bill?
Probably a couple bucks or something like that.
$3.75.
And that was a lot then.
Yeah, and it was limited calls with a two-party line.
Yep.
We had 40 calls, and we had somebody on our line.
Could you dial, or did you have to go through an operator?
No, we had a telephone, you know, the dial.
The rotary type?
Yeah, the rotary type phone that sat on the desk. And but a lot of times we wanted to make a call if something was important and they wouldn't get off. And then when we get on, then they were picking up the phone and banging it down. And
yeah, get off. Now, yeah. did you ever know who that other person was, where they were?
No, we had our suspicions, but we didn't know for sure.
That's the other funny part, too. You had a connection, a party line, and you knew they were in the neighborhood, but you didn't know who they were.
But the crazy part of it was, like I said, $375 a month. Do you know what I pay now for a landline?
I bet 50 bucks, maybe, huh?
Over 50.
Jeez.
And the reason why I have it is for health reasons.
Tell me, what do you mean?
Well, I have health reasons, and if my electric goes off, which it goes off two or three times a year here in St. Louis, South County down by the barracks.
Know it well.
Yeah, and when the electric goes off, why, that's the only thing that works in the house is the telephone.
Can't you get one of those things that you push a button in case something happens to you? You know, like you have a bracelet or something that they have?
No, I don't want one of them.
You don't? Okay.
Uh-uh. I've been approached about that idea, but I said no, not yet.
still comfortable with the call, huh?
Yeah, but anyway, it seems like every February my bill goes up, And I call the telephone company and complain about it. I tell them, you know, well, I'm a senior and I'm on a fixed income. And I only have a landline. I keep the landline for health reasons. And I think you should give your seniors and your
a discount.
Who have been, you know, longtime customers, you should give them a discount. They won't do it.
They should. No.
They should, yeah. Just about everybody else will offer you a discount. ARP won't help us there. They help us with a lot of things, but they don't help us with our phone lines.
Have you ever had to use 911 to come and help you?
Not yet. Knock on wood.
Knock on wood. Keep
My
those prayers coming.
911.
Keep those prayers. Okay, Joni. Thanks for the call.
One other thing. I wanted to tell you a story about my telephone. One day, my phone was ringing, and I looked at my caller ID. I'm calling myself.
How'd you do that?
Good question. But I looked at the caller ID, and there was my phone number. So I answered it just for grins, and I don't know. They didn't answer me back. Whoever it was didn't answer me back. But I called the phone company and told them about it. They said, that's just spoofing. They're just spoofing
you. Yep, they're coming in like crazy.
And one other thing. Before you let me go,
okay.
You used to have a rule that nobody could call except about once a month when you was a Nighthawk.
Used to be once a month. Now it's once a show.
Just about.
Once a show. If you can call in and get through.
That's why we can't get through, because all the regulars are getting through all the time.
Well, that's because they know how to call.
Well, yeah, right. That's not fair to us.
They have the secret. But you got in.
Yeah, by luck tonight. You don't know how many times I've tried and couldn't get in.
Okay, Joni.
I wanted to get in so bad when that lady was talking about the electric treatments on your shoulders and your back and stuff.
Yep.
I really tried that night and I couldn't get in.
We had a lot of callers come in.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Joni. Be well. Thanks. Next up, Alex in Sacramento. Hey, Alex. Thanks for holding.
George, it is such a great pleasure to finally get through and actually talk to you. I've been listening to you the last few months, and there's been so many times I try to call in, and you should see the phone log. It's like sometimes 50 times a night I was just trying to get through, and I could never get through. And you had so many good, you always have great guests on, but there was a few guests that you had on, like the numbers lady and stuff, and I was just like, come on, get in.
Oh, my God. She packs the calls. She packs them.
Well, I'm really happy that I was able to get through tonight. But just wanted to say how much I love your show, how much I appreciate it. I just wanted to share a quick story. Oh, and I don't have a landline. I wish I could, but, man, it's just so expensive, especially everything.
They are. And really, you don't need one if you got your cell phone, you know.
But you never know. And, you know, the landlines are hardwired in, you know.
Yep.
So, but I do have a funny little story. If anybody check out the grandparents, there's a video out there, grandparents. With their grandkids, they have a rotary phone here. Said, "Here, pick it up. Try to use it."
They don't know what it is.
Yeah, they try to figure it out, and it's just entertaining. But just really quick, my story is a few months ago. I work graveyard shifts. I'm on the streets that night, driving around from city to city out here in Sacramento, and anywhere going up towards Auburn or down south or whatever. But I wanted to listen to a talk show. I was just like, you know, I'm kind of over the music right now. And I just so happened to come across your show one night. And I started listening in. I was like, wow, really interesting. Now, when this happened, you know, I started tuning in every time I go to work 5 days a week, 8-hour shifts for graveyards. And some stuff started happening in my place, my condo that I live in with my girlfriend.
Uh-huh.
Little paranormal stuff. And it didn't start with me. It started with her. And basically what had happened around the same time I tuned into your show that week, I was on an online class. It was on my day off, and I was downstairs, and my girlfriend came down, and she's like, hey, were you just upstairs? Well, I was planted on the couch, and I had my books out and everything, and was doing my Zoom for my class. And I looked at her, I was like, no. But she was just pale. Just completely pale, like she was spooked. I'm like, well, you know, what was going on? And she said there was somebody upstairs that said my name that was in the other bedroom across the hall from our main our master bedroom. And I was like, I could tell, you know, she was very just like, whoa, it spooked me and stuff. And it hasn't stopped, but the good thing is the presence alone is not, it doesn't feel evil or, you know, like it's going to attack you and stuff.
Right.
You know? And the funny thing is I've always been kind of skeptical when it comes to the paranormal stuff. You know, I've had a couple experiences, but since this stuff, I've been like really just a more of a true believer, you know.
Yeah.
One night in the kitchen, she was at work. I was at home. We both work graveyards, but I still happened to be home. And about 3 o'clock or so, I was in the kitchen and I was looking at the TV, cleaning up the house. And then I heard a noise in the kitchen. I'm like, what was that? And so, you know, I shrugged it off. It sounded like a crackle in the kitchen. And then I turned around. I look. I was like, oh, there's nothing there. So, you know, I went about my business and I heard it again. And it was more clear. It sounded like, I don't know, like you had little poppers, you know, from the packaging boxes, and you're popping the little tiny
ones. Right, those little air compressed things.
Right. Yeah. And so I sat there and I'm like, that was really clear. Like, where is that coming from? Look around the kitchen. All of a sudden, I get the biggest chill from my back of my neck that went throughout my entire body. And so I texted my girlfriend. I said, I think your ghost friends are here. But the thing is that I feel like the place I live in was built 14 years ago. So we did some research, couldn't find anything, any, you know, deaths or anything or anything related to the people, the previous owners. But I feel like my girlfriend is, she's channeling it more than I am.
That could be, or it could be the land. Something could have happened on the land hundreds of years ago.
Yeah, I do live in Galt, which is more of a rural area, so it could be. But she definitely has more of the connection than I do. I've felt it. I've felt the presence, but she's actually seen shapes, like a shape of a man, shadow figure sometimes, you know?
Right.
And wears a white shirt. So, but anyways, it's very interesting because when all this has started happening, of course, I tuned into your show and I have been just a fan nonstop since. I tune in every night when I'm at work, and
thanks,
I just want to let you know I appreciate your show. I appreciate everything you do, your fairness, your questions, anything, everything. It's been awesome to find your show and be able to just, you know, listen to it every night. And I really appreciate you guys and everything you guys do.
Super, my friend. I really appreciate that. You stay safe out there and keep calling in. Text and tweets. Tommy, what do you have?
Hey, this one in from Terry in New York. What's the stupidest thing you've ever accidentally done?
I told this story. You will remember it. When I was in television news in Detroit, I'm 26, 27 years old at the time. You know what a paper spindle is?
I could guess, but
all right. When you have a bunch of papers, like, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of them, and this is like a spike. and you put it down on the spike, and it stays there. You know, they don't blow around or anything. They're on a spike.
Like Jim did with you at BB.
Yeah, those kinds of things.
Yep.
Well, I had too many papers, and I hit it down on the spike, and the spike slipped. I slid the paper. Instead of the papers going through the spike, they just slid to where my hand went over the spike, and as I pushed down, it went right through my hand.
All the way through?
All the way through, sticking right out. I didn't feel it. It went between my baby finger and the other finger, right down at the middle of it, where there's no bone, and my hand is right over the spike. My director, who's not with us anymore, old Monty, a dear friend of mine, looks down and sees the spike sticking out of my hand, and he's screaming, I don't feel it. I don't feel a thing. I look down and go, oh, my God. I lift my hand up. The spike comes up with it. It's on a little round base on the bottom. And slowly pulled it out. And a little blood popped out, but not much. But I ended up having to go to the hospital for a tetanus shot because the spike is made out of metal.
You are really lucky.
But that is that answers your question.
That could have gone through. That's terrible.
Horrible. You got it. Next up, let's go to first-time caller Elwanda in Tennessee. Hello, Elwanda.
Hello, Mr. George. How are you tonight?
Oh, wonderful, and thank you for holding so long.
Well, that's quite all right. I was so intrigued when I heard you ask the question about cell phone versus landline.
Yeah.
Well, when I moved here in 2001, we had retired, and I moved to the farm that my great-granddaddy had owned, and no cell signal. And I have gone to every cell phone company, and they always give you this map, and they show you this is the area we cover. And where I live, it's covered in red, which shows they cover that area. But that ain't true.
Nope, it doesn't work, does it?
Nope. Because we have no, we have to go 9 miles before we get cell signal.
That's where those landlines are reliable.
So I rely on my landline. And I thought that was funny when you, because people will say to me, especially at the doctor's office, you know how you have to give your history?
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say, well, what's your cell signal? What's your cell phone number? You didn't write it down here. And I said, it's because I don't have one that works. Well, why not? And I used to get my feelings hurt about them asking me about that. Now it's a little annoying.
Yeah.
That everybody assumes you've got a cell phone. Well, no, not all of us have.
That's true. Do you get robocalls on the landline?
Yes.
They don't stop, do they?
Well, I got a set of wireless, not wireless, but cordless phones.
Yeah.
And one of them, the set I have now, is an AT&T, and it's got a big old button on it. It says block call. And every time I get one of those solicitation calls,
just block it.
That block call, and don't hear from them anymore.
And they give you unlimited block on that?
Yes, sir.
Well, that's the way to do it. Okay, great. Thanks a lot, Elwanda. I appreciate that. Wayne in Tacoma. Hello, Wayne. Welcome.
Good evening, George. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Sure thing.
I want to send a shout-out to our friend Barry and Martha Poole there in South Carolina. Shout-out for prayer and
sure thing.
Wishes and that everything's going good for him. Also for Lynn Shaw in Searcy, Arkansas, and for our friend down in Louisiana, Cornelius, and of course, Mike in Denver. George, I wanted to talk a little bit tonight about the so-called epidemic that's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
Compare it with the big one back in 1918. But before I do that, I wanted to make a comment on the gentleman that was just on tonight. You asked, what does the church have to say about tarot card readings?
Right.
And I found that Pope Francis did a YouTube on tarot card reading and palm reading. Yeah, it's on YouTube. Anybody that wants to watch it can go to it. It's pretty good.
I would guess he's opposed to it.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I found on Catholic StraightAnswer.com said that people that sacrifice to anybody but God, a medium, the fortune teller, shall be put to death by stoning.
Oh, geez. Yeah, but that's what they thought about in those days.
Well, a lot of people still do, actually.
Yeah, they do, unfortunately.
Exactly.
But right. you compare COVID to the Spanish flu?
George, I mean, when you look at it compared to the Spanish flu, and I've done a little research on this, actually quite a bit. A Canadian researcher and some other people back as far as early 2000s that did research on this, and they traced the so-called Spanish flu to China.
Yep, everything comes out of China, Wayne, everything. We've got to come back in just a moment. We've got the skeptic coming in here to talk about some skeptical things and why he doesn't believe in just about anything in just a moment on Coast to Coast. Also, don't forget to sign up for our free YouTube channel by going to Coast to Coast AM Official in the YouTube search bar. We'll be back in a moment. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you. You know, many people believe in the afterlife. Some of them are even skeptics, like Michael Shermer. Listen in.
You know, I don't know for sure if there's an afterlife or not, or if consciousness is the ground of all being, as he says, and, you know, that things are radically different than what most materialist scientists think. You know, it's entirely possible. You know, we have to keep an open mind.
I had a story right before you came on that most non-believers
A new survey says, well, 25% of them, one in four, call on God when faced with a crisis. It's an interesting take.
Yeah, that is
25%.
I thought you were going to say call on God during sex, but that's probably different. Actually, in my book, I cite a Pew survey that shows that about a third of atheists say they believe in an afterlife. Now, obviously, they're not thinking heaven with Jesus and all that, but you know, they're probably thinking something like what Deepak believes, that you know, when you die, you just your consciousness goes to where it was before you were born. That is, it returns to its you know state of eternal consciousness or something like that, some kind of deistic or pantheistic type belief. And you know, so it's not just super black and white. You know, you believe in God and Jesus and the afterlife, or you don't. You know, there's a whole bunch of different positions in between.
So let's get into the incredible work that you've got here, Heavens on Earth. And tell me, what got you to write this?
Well, I'm in my 60s now, so, you know, I'm cramming for the final.
We're on the home stretch, Michael.
I thought I better think about, you know, like where I'm going to go here in the next act. Well, I'm kind of being flippant, but I guess, you know, in a way I started thinking about those things as an extension of my previous work about the supernatural, the paranormal, God. Morality, you know, if there's no God, what's the basis of morality? You know, this kind of thing. And so, but if you don't believe in God, you know, what happens when you die? You know, that's like one of the big questions. And, you know, so I just started reading and researching what people think about this. You know, it's one of the great eternal questions. You can actually go all the way back to Neanderthals that bury their dead with flowers and animals that grieve.
Elephants. I noticed a picture of the elephants in your book grieving over their dead.
Yes, it's startling. And they focus more on their own kind, and particularly like skulls and tusks they'll touch with their
trunks.
With their trunks more than other parts of the body and other, you know, kinds of artifacts that are put out in the field. So clearly they have some sense that, you know, that's me, and it's changed. It's not alive anymore. Now, you know, we don't have any idea what they're thinking, but there's some sense that clearly they grieve. You know, most higher primates have some kind of grief. You know, Jane Goodall talked
sure.
about
sure, but I mean, grieving does not prove, though, the existence one way or another of the other side.
Yeah, that's right, and we don't even know if they're thinking that there's another side or not. You know, it's hard to say what other animals think, but for sure our species does, you know, and that goes all the way back to the beginnings of civilization, at the very least, and probably before. You know, some kind of sense that, let's put it this way. The problem is you can't conceive of not being alive. That is, if I say, imagine yourself dead, what do you see? You know, most people say, well, I see myself in a casket, and my friends and family are there, and, you know, hopefully they're grieving. but, you know, of course, you wouldn't see anything, because to experience anything, you have to be alive. So, you know, death would be something like anesthesia, you know, where it's, you know, 10, 9, 8, lights out,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, you wake up, and you have no sense of time lapsed. With sleep, sometimes you have some kind of sense that time has lapsed because you have some dreams in there.
Right.
And general anesthesia, you have nothing. It's just gone. And probably death is something like that. Now, what happens after that, no one knows for sure. So I do deal with near-death experiences, reincarnation, and, you know, other claims of people that have gone there and come back. But for the most part, you know, we really don't know. And so that opens the problem up is that I can't conceive of what it would be like to be dead. I can only conceive of life, because to conceive of anything, you have to be alive. So it presents something of a paradox. Everyone we know that has lived before us, about 100 billion people have come before the 7.5 billion people alive today. And, you know, they're all gone. So, you know, we know death is real. And yet we can't conceive of it. So that creates something of a paradox for how to think about it.
Somebody asked me once if the other side exists, and I said, I think it does, but, you know, I'm not 100% sure. You know, I've heard some incredible stories on my radio show from guests and callers, but I'm, you know, not 100% sure. And I said, and quite frankly, if it doesn't exist, who cares?
That's right. You wouldn't even know. You'll never know.
It's right. So don't worry about it.
That's right. There's really nothing to worry about. And most of the great philosophers, Socrates and Buddha and so forth, they that's what they say. It's like, well, why worry about it? Because you won't even know.
See, I say, Michael, that I think it exists because we still don't even know how the heck we got here and what we're doing here. And to me, that mystery alone tells you that there's something very strange about everything.
Well, I guess that's true, yes. There are still great mysteries.
Yeah, I don't think nature could have done this. There's too much order to it. There's just too much. It just makes sense.
Yeah, well, I think we do have some pretty good self-organizing principles, laws of nature giving rise to order out of chaos, just like snowflakes crystallize just by the laws of nature, physics, and, you know, honeycombs are formed by bees, by the laws of nature of life and biology. You know, I think there is order that comes about naturally. Now, where those laws of nature came from, you know, at some point we hit an epistemological wall. You know, where did those come from? You know, you could argue God, or, you know, they just arose out of the Big Bang or whatever. You know, at some point, no one knows. You go back far enough. And, you know, that's really where we are in physics and cosmology is, you know, we're all the way back to, you know, a fraction of a second after the Big Bang. What was there before the Big Bang? You can't even really ask the question. That's why I opened the book with saying, not only imagine yourself dead, you can't. Imagine nothing, you know, no people, no planets, no galaxies, stars, no light. But you couldn't even imagine that because there'd be no space or time either. There'd be nothing. And you can't even really conceive of what that means, nothing. Because the word itself, no thing, implies that there's a thing that doesn't exist, but there's not even a thing that can't exist. And so even using the words becomes somewhat meaningless. It's just bizarre to think about.
When Michael Shermer was a little boy, did you believe in life after death or a God, or what was your belief system then?
I didn't really think about it too much. My parents weren't religious, or they weren't not religious either. Just something I did. I pretty much thought about sports and then later girls. You know, I was a pretty typical guy. But I started thinking about this in college, taking philosophy and just sort of reading about what the great minds think about the great questions: God, free will, you know, determinism, the afterlife, you know, all those sorts of things, just as sort of an intellectual exercise. It really wasn't until I got much older that I started thinking about, you know, what will happen, and, you know, why does any of this matter for what I'm doing? So another analogy I make, I call this Alvey's error, from the film, Woody Allen's film, Annie Hall, where he plays Alvey Singer, a famous comedian, and there's a flashback scene where he's a little boy, and he refuses to do his homework, so his mom takes him to the doctor, and the psychiatrist or doctor, whatever he is saying, Alvey, how come you don't want to do your homework? And he says, because I found out the universe is expanding. He says, the universe is expanding? He goes, yeah, the universe is expanding, and eventually it'll all blow up, so none of this matters. And his mother yells at him, we live in Brooklyn. Brooklyn's not expanding, so go do your homework.
Practical and true.
In a way, you know, we don't live 15 billion years from now, or like I tell Deepak Chopra, you know, we don't live in a quantum world where, you know, atoms are all empty space. We live in a world that's macro, that's, you know, that chairs are solid, and you sit on them, and it's like we live in the here and now. So whether there's an afterlife or not, in a way, it doesn't really matter. We live now, we live in the here and now, not the hereafter. So what you do now is really what counts, either way. Whether there's an afterlife or not, it doesn't really matter. Now is what counts. So make the most of it.
Well, indeed. So, Michael, do you think religion created the afterlife to keep people in line?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's a little bit of a cynical view by some atheists and people like Voltaire and other cynics that, you know, it's a made-up story to keep the hoi polloi masses in line. I don't think so. I think it's a natural byproduct of our brains that are big enough to conceive of this idea, just being self-aware, aware that we're mortal. far as we know, no other species are aware of this fact. You know, we mentioned elephants that grieve, but we don't think elephants or dogs or chimps are aware, sitting there thinking, oh my God, this is it. They may miss a grieving one in the sense that they're gone, they're out of the room.
Right, they're not there.
But we don't think they're thinking, you know, so they're on the other side, or they're a ghost or something like that, or a non-corporeal spirit living on some other plane. You know, we're probably the only species that does that. And I think that's just a product of having a cortex that's big enough to conceive of non-material things like love or logic or mathematics or aesthetic appreciation, beauty, truth, things like that that aren't physical. We can still conceive of them. And the afterlife in the soul, spirit, the mind, you know, these are words we use to describe these things that are non-material, and so therefore we can conceive of it. And I think the afterlife is something like that. So I think cynically, you know, politicians or religious leaders may use that as a tool, but I think the belief in it is something that's just innate in our brains.
Let me jump that. Do you think because of the vastness of this universe, it's entirely possible that there's intelligent life out there on other planetary systems?
Oh, I think it's very probable that there are. I don't think they've come here, but I think that they're out there. You know, no one knows for sure, but, you know, the more they search, astronomers search, the Drake equation, the number of stars that have planets and so on keeps going up. So it would be just stunningly improbable if we were the only one.
I agree. Yeah. Are you tipping more toward a believer or still a skeptic about things in general?
I'm definitely an atheist. I don't think there's a God or afterlife. The default position is that these things don't exist until proven otherwise. That's the scientist in me. Of course, I'd like these things.
You're an atheist or agnostic?
So behaviorally, I'm an atheist. And no one's an agnostic behaviorally. You have to make a decision when you get up on Sunday mornings. Am I going to church or am I going to watch the football game? Behaviorally, I'm an atheist. Ontologically speaking, you know, no one knows, epistemologically speaking, no one knows for sure. So I'm an agnostic in the sense that Thomas Henry Huxley coined the word agnostic in 1869, he meant not knowable. That there's not an experiment, you know, one more experiment we'll run to determine if global warming is real or not. It's not like that for God. I don't think there's an experiment we're going to run that says, there it is, for sure there is a God or there isn't a God, and we're done with it and move on to the next question. I don't think it's in that same category. So agnostic in terms of whether there is a God or not, but how do I act? I assume there probably isn't.
What about faith, though, Michael? Where does faith fit into the equation here with you?
Well, the word generally means believing without sufficient evidence, and I try to avoid that. My friend Tim Minchin has a little joke, you know, the comedian, songwriter Tim Minchin has a line about, you know, what do you call love without evidence? Stalking. Even with love, you need to have evidence. I think evidence is the basis should be the basis of our beliefs. There are some things where, you know, we don't have enough evidence, so we do make the leap or not. And as, you know, behavioral economists have shown, people like Danny Kahneman won the Nobel Prize for his work in this area, most of the decisions we make are not based on sufficient evidence. We just kind of make a leap on how we feel about it. You know, this investment or that decision, or you're going to marry this person or not. You know, we rarely weigh all the evidence. So, you know, default in terms of how we actually act, we tend to act like in a way that sounds like faith. But, you know, in terms of the big decisions, just thinking like a scientist, you just have to kind of put it aside and say, well, we don't know. It's like the UFO question. You know, there's this 5% residual non-explained. You know, the ufologists and me agree that, you know, 90 to 95% of the sightings are explained. What about the other 5 to 10%? Well, you know, for me, I just say, I don't know, and I'm just going to leave it at that because I don't have a commitment to believing in it one way or the other. I don't need to make a leap of faith. For the UFO believer, they say, well, I think that 5 to 10% represents something real, and they go with it. You know, so it kind of comes down to what you do with the unexplained. You know, so there's certain things unexplained. Where, you know, what caused the Big Bang? We don't know.
Well, I never never knew I had Martians in my garden. And I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware. But now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. 'Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. 'Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Good morning or good evening, wherever you may be, whichever world you're living in, whatever century. Your voice is always welcome here on my radio. Call in with your space transmitter or your telephone. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. 'Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast.
For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lottasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, Tim Banal, George Knapp, and Ian Punnett, I'm George Norrie somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.